Okay, we're delighted to be joined in the studio today by singer, songwriter, producer, performer, Mr. Don Meskell. Good afternoon, Don.
General all-around chancer.
Well, you're
chancer from County Limerick.
Yeah, you have a fine list of stuff there. We won't say anything about Limerick now at the moment, the hurling and all that. We're getting the right pasting down this side. I suppose where do we start really? Like you've loads of recordings done. You've lots of artists have recorded by you. Like some huge names out there: Cliff Richard, Paul McCartney, Jerry Halliwell, Backstreet Boys, Sharon Corr, Nick Mason. A lot of people out there. When you're writing, and this is one of the things that kind of struck me, when you're writing a song like that or writing lyrics, do you write it for yourself or have you someone in mind? Or what way does it work?
Well, Eric, really what I try to do is, I don't really do that thing where I'm writing with somebody in mind. And actually, during COVID, it was kind of, I found it quite nice to be able to go back to a more simplified version of myself as a writer, because basically, you know, I wasn't allowed to have anybody else there.
Because
a lot of the times you'd have the artist in the room or you might have a co-writer. But, you know, during COVID, and I know we're going to touch on it later, when I did the album for Christy, I wrote the album for Christy Dignam from Aslan, I was just on my own. But generally, I don't look at songwriting from that point of view at all. I start sometimes with an idea of a melody, maybe on the guitar, a different tuning. I play in a sort of alternate tunings all the time. Or lyrically, something might come into my head that I think is a strong starting point that maybe if I worked on it a little bit and kind of delved into it a little bit more, it might be an interesting subject matter. That's really what I do. So I'll start with it. And it might be, you know, something that somebody else says, or it might be something that I've read. I like to read a lot, and or generally, you know, just normal day-to-day stuff in life that you hear or people say to you, and you think, wow, that's an interesting perspective on that. I wouldn't have thought of that. And then that subsequently, I mean, listen, I don't want to sound like I'm that complicated, but I think what happens in my own head, if I do try to figure it out, I think I'm like some sort of a hard drive, and I take in a lot of stuff, you know, from people and life. And then it all gets turned around in my brain. And then at some other stage, those ideas become something that I'm working on.
Yeah, they come
over. But, you know, it's funny. Like, I've really realized one thing as I've got a little bit older, that my biggest excitement out of all of it, like from what I do for a living and what I do for love, really, songwriting, is the actual creation of the song. Because a lot of people said to me, oh my God, you know, all these people have done your songs, and is that exciting? Well, of course it's exciting, but it's nothing like the excitement of the actual moment that before there was nothing and then there's a little song.
Yeah, and I've heard many artists being asked like what their favourite song was, and a lot of them say, well, none of them really, because they're like your babies. As you said, you're like your creations.
Yeah, little babies, and you put them out into the world, and what I find is my favourite one is probably the latest one I've written.
Yeah?
Well, yeah, probably, you know, because I think you have more excitement about the fact that, you know, it's almost like I find with myself that I'm almost challenging myself to dig a little bit deeper and to, you know, kind of, because, you know, you can't be sort of, you can't be complacent about it, because, you know, you're going to put it out there. you don't want someone else to listen to it and think, oh my God, that was pretty crap, you know. So you're trying your best. And, you know, because it's out there forever after you put your name to it. So I do
try
to...
going back.
Oh, there's a lot of stuff I wouldn't want you to hear. But I'll tell you a funny story. My sister Catherine, my baby sister Catherine, we're from a small family from County Limerick, and there's only 11 of us. And it's Catherine and myself are the youngest, you know. But I remember one year when I was over here from the UK and I was touring and I was playing in that place in Cork. Oh, what's the name of that lovely venue in Cork? It's kind of upstairs.
Doesn't Sir Henry's or
no,
the lobby?
No, it's a venue. I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, I was playing in there, and it was a particularly good show for me. And at the time, I think I had a little hit song on the radio, and it was presses full, you know. And and all of that. And I think I was on my second encore, and my sister, Catherine, she kind of came up to the front of the stage and she whispered something, and I thought she was going to say something like, oh, you know, why don't you do? And she did. And she remembered the worst song I had ever written in my life. And I think she just did it so she ground me a little bit. But the song was called She's a Nurse, and we both laughed so much. I was literally breaking my sides on stage laughing, because it is a terrible song. So there are a lot of songs that I've written that, obviously, Catherine's heard a few of them, but I wouldn't want anybody to hear. So they're not all bloody amazing. But
well, I suppose that's like everything we do in life. You know, there's some stuff, you know. I did something.
But they're the feelings that I like. I like when I nail it, and it's not. It's nothing to do with ego. It's nothing. It's just for myself, really, to be honest, because it helps me sleep at night. And I go, yeah, okay, I got. You know, that's. I'm happy with that. You know.
Yeah, and like, do you know when you're going to write like that? It's. You know, some people like that are very regimental. Are you one of these people that you just get kind of inspired in the moment and you just take off and you get lost in your own world?
I remember hearing an interview years ago with I think it was a fine songwriter from the same area that I'm from, well, from Limerick, Mick Hanley. And I remember reading this interview. It was either reading or listening to it on the radio, and he was interviewed, and he said, you know, that he gets up every morning at 5:30 with a blank piece of paper and a pen. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I'm so lazy, because I don't do it like that at all. Like, I don't force the song right.
Yeah, yeah.
So I write when I feel compelled to write. And then the songs that come out when I'm in that writing mode are generally the songs that I'm really happy with. But I wouldn't dream of putting myself through that. Why would you do that?
Yeah,
I suppose. But it's different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, I suppose like that, you're I suppose you're more natural at it.
To clarify, I think Mick's great.
Yeah, I know that, yeah, but you know, some people are, I suppose, they like destruction. No, other people like to...
No, I think songwriting, for me, started off as a form of communication where I was trying to communicate my thoughts or my stories with other people, and maybe part of that was that I wouldn't feel so insane myself inside my own head. And then I think also I used it as a sort of a pressure valve emotionally, where if I did feel, you know, if I've noticed about myself over the years that I'm probably oversensitive to a lot of things in life. But, you know, through songwriting, I've been able to sort of take off that big rucksack of all these thoughts.
Well, funny enough, because I mean, psychotherapists will tell you that, you know, when you have stuff like that going on in your head, put it down on paper and
absolutely. Well, no therapist told me that, but it has certainly worked for me.
Worked it out
so
yourself.
I'm going around as happy as Larry when, unfortunately, people hear these songs, they have to carry it. No, I'm only joking, but yeah, it really works like that, and I'm for the first time really in my life, in the last few years especially, I'm so grateful to the universe and God, or if it's the same thing or whoever it is, that it has allowed me to do this, because there's never a dull moment. I just really enjoy it. I don't ever have any regrets about going on this.
And like, the last couple of years have been extremely difficult for all artists such as yourself. What kind of an effect did that have on you, and you know, cause performers want to perform at the end of the day.
Yeah, look, here's the thing. I mean, you know, I wouldn't want anybody to think that I'm complaining, because I'm very, very fortunate and very, very lucky, and people have gone through such hardships through COVID. From my point of view, you know, I had a full blown recording studio in London, in Greenwich on the river, and COVID hit, and instantly my business was gone.
Yeah.
But luckily it was also a turning point in my life where it allowed me to make a decision that I wanted to make for so long, where I wanted to come home. And I was always afraid to, you know, because, you know, you have work coming in and you're all of them. And luckily for me, the way it was kind of serendipity, but it was funny the way it all happened, because I had a place bought in County Cavan, and an old church. And when COVID hit, I thought to myself, it's now or never. So basically, I locked up the studio, locked up the building, you know, two truckloads of stuff, and arrived in Cavan. I'd only been in Cavan maybe once or twice.
Really?
That's all, yeah. So I was in the middle of nowhere on Quivy Island, you know, by a lake, at the start of lockdown.
Big difference from Greenwich.
And I just thought, oh my God, I've just, it's like winning the lotto. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because my life changed.
Yeah.
So I have, you know, and I really sort of understand that people went through a terrible time. Thank God. I was just very, very lucky that, you know.
You got lucky, yeah.
Changed my life.
No. As we said at the start, you've written and produced for a lot of artists, nationally and internationally and all that. Like, but one, and I think listening to some past interviews from yourself, you've written and produced a new album for Christy Dingham, who before even that, I think, played a big part in your music.
Well,
career,
here's the thing. I mean, Christy and I, first of all, well, I was always a fan of Aslan.
Mm.
And I'll always remember this, that I think I had some cousin, Pat, my cousin Pat is. I think he was working as a bouncer in the old Savoy in Limerick at one stage. And I think he allowed me to come in when I was not old enough to go in. And it was an Aslan concert. So I saw about 15 minutes of an Aslan concert.
Yeah.
And I was blown away, you know, these rockers from Dublin. I couldn't believe it. Yeah. I thought they were so cool. Now, fast forward many, many years later, I wrote Too Late for Hallelujah for Aslan. And that had been, that went to number one, and it was their first number one in, you know, in a long time. So I had developed a connection with Christy, and then I duetted with Aslan on a song called Catch Your Fall for Pieta House. So we had developed a kind of a relationship and a kind of a trust thing. So at the beginning of COVID, when I moved to Ireland, he had heard that I had moved. And he reached out to me, he phoned me, and he just said, look, you know, Christy, you know, he shoots straight from the hip. He said, you know, I'm dying. And he said, I have a bucket list of stuff that I want to do before I, you know, hang up my clogs. And he said, one of them is to make a solo record. And I remember the conversation, and I was thinking, geez, like, I feel honored that he's asked me. But I have to be honest, like, it was a lot of pressure, you know, because I thought, if I get this wrong, you know, because he instantly was calling it his legacy record, his last record. And I just thought, Jesus, there's a lot of responsibility.
It's a big responsibility, yeah, when
so,
you look at it like that. Yeah,
yeah. But I took it on and never looked back. And I'm so delighted that he's so happy. And I'm so grateful that the critics love the album. And, you know, it's done really well. And actually, the vinyl is out this week. Yeah, he's real happy with it, and he thinks it's probably the best record he's made, and he keeps saying it, and so that makes me happy, because I felt there was a, you know, there was definitely a weight of responsibility.
Yeah, tell us the name of the album.
The album is called The Man Who Stayed Alive, and there's a peculiar backstory to that, because a few years ago, when Christy was kind of, well, everybody felt that he was on his last legs. There was a concert in. The Olympia, sort of a, I suppose, what would have been a fundraiser or a kind of tribute concert to him, and lots of people contributed, and I know you too did, and anyway, they flew me over from the UK, and I remember singing Too Late for Hallelujah with Mary Black, which was nice, and then I did Catch Your Fall, I think, with Kira and Aslan, that's Christy's daughter. And that was my, you know, that was my contribution and stuff like that. So I remember being backstage, and there was a sort of a well-known Irish rock journalist who I shouldn't mention because, you know, I might be sued or something. But I remember saying to him, he just came up to me and he said, hey, Don, really enjoy that, da-da-da-da-da-da. And then I said to him, dude, like, how ill is Christy? Because, you know, I hadn't seen Christy. I knew he was going to be doing sort of the last song there. He was in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I have the obituary written. And I thought, oh, sweet Jesus, really? And he said, well, yeah. He said, think about it this way. He's had a big, long career. So if he does go in the next couple of days, you couldn't be, you know, everybody has it ready. And I said, wow, what a strange, and it stuck in my head, you know. So when Christy asked me to produce and write the record, that was stuck in my head. And I remember these conversations I was having with him on the phone where he was talking about nature and he was talking about this. And I was thinking, wow, isn't it funny that everybody had said 5 years ago that he literally had a week to live? And I thought, what would someone like that say? And I thought they'd say, I am the man who stayed alive. That's really it. That's where I came. And one night very late, I had been messing about I have a recording studio in the church. And the melody came to me, and I went out sometimes, as I do, just go for a walk quite late. And pretty much had finished, I think, by the time I came back. And one of the verses that I had written for it is the last line before the chorus is the obituary written for the man who's dead alive. So it was like this man started proclaiming, wow, against all odds, here I am. The man is dead alive.
Yeah, you know, he, so, and he's still alive and kicking.
He's still alive and kicking. Well, so that's where that came from. And
oh, I like that story, because I was kind of intrigued when I see the name of the album.
The man is dead. Well, that's what it is. And another song on it, High, that I wrote for that record, I said to him, God, isn't it funny that we're you know, because we would have these kind of, listen, I have to be honest, I led a bit of a rock and roll lifestyle myself in London for years. You know, I lived over a pub with several members of the Pogues, and do you know what I mean? Like, there was it wasn't Lane Levin, but he was telling me once that he said, it's really weird, man. He said, you know, I just get high on life. And I was thinking, well, there you go, there's the single, isn't it? High, it's gotta be.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
in the chorus or whatever, you know, it's just like, that's what it is. He's high on life as opposed to.
Well, he is. I think he is. Every time you see him like that now, and you know, you can see that he absolutely
don't
is.
Don't they
like,
say
yeah.
that when you get like, it's. I'm sure he has a. I'm sure, it must be a quite awakening moment when you're very aware of your own mortality, because we'll say healthy people, if you like, have no idea. But I guess he kind of has an idea.
Absolutely. If you're faced with that and you're going to think different, absolutely.
So I was careful. So with the whole album, even the last song on the record is a song called I Feel Alive, because there was one day when he was up at the church and we were recording, and he likes to have a ciggy, and he was standing outside the church, and it was a particularly nice day, and the birds were just amazing, and I went out and I had a cigarette with him just for fun, and he said to me, do you know, he said, I've after spotting 10 different types of finches that you've got out here. And I thought, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That there he is, he's out there, you know, after that rock, and he's looking at nature. So what I did was I got up one morning at about 6 o'clock, and I recorded the birds at the church, and I put them on the beginning of the record and the end of the record.
Oh, nice idea.
Yeah.
You see, this is why you guys stand out. You know, you can walk that.
Well, I just thought it was a sort of an interesting.
That's class.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting way to start and finish the record, you know. So, yeah, look, I really enjoyed. We did something there on radio last week or whatever, and he said a lovely thing. He said that there wasn't a moment of you know, like, it was all joy from the beginning to the end making the record. And that's really what you want, because music is about the heart, isn't it? About the soul. And it's only when you start using the second word, industry, it's like, in my head, it's almost like a dirty word. Like, music is such a beautiful word because it conjures up, you know. Like, last night I was at Catherine's house, and she's got beautiful kids, and they were playing me off their playlists what they were listening to and stuff like that, and they've great taste in music, you know, and they're young, and they were still talking about, you know, stuff like Daryl Hall and John Oates and you know, stuff like that. And I was thinking, wow, music plays such a part in all of our lives, and it's got nothing to do with an industry.
No, absolutely not, you know. No.
How many times are there occasions in your life where you almost attach a particular song to a particular time?
Regular.
Don't you?
Yeah,
like I do. My brother Tom's older than me, got great taste in music, and my oldest sister Breda, after Dad had died, she used to take us down to Sherkin Island with her husband and their kids, you know, on a holiday for a couple of weeks each year. And when they'd go out to the pub at night, Tom and I would be listening to Radio Luxembourg. And I can still tell you the songs that were playing. There was that
song. Was it Tuesday nights, I think? Was it the Top 40 or Top 30
and
Radio Luxembourg?
But it was like, I can still remember like songs like, you know, remember Sam, Olivia Newton-John, or that song, Airport? I don't know who's there.
I can remember the play record, trying to tape them off the radio.
I tried to tape them off the radio. and like, I know that every time I hear any of those songs, all I think about is that house in Sherkin Island.
Yeah.
So that's what I like to hear when people talk to me about songs. As, you know, there's a song that I might give you a couple of bars of, Sunday Drive, and basically that song was born out of the fact that when we were younger, on a Sunday, we'd have we'd go to mass, obviously, in Ahan, and then we'd have lunch, and we'd have it early, you know, like we'd have our lunch early. And that was different every other day. And then every Sunday, religiously, we'd go for a drive. And Dad, you know, never had a good car. He was a mechanic, but he never had a good car. They were all terrible cars. And then, you know, when I have been kind of telling people about this, they'd say, but did you have a minibus? But how did 11 of you? And I said, it's easy. We just, all the older ones sat in the back seat, probably five across.
Yeah.
If you think about it, you know, because, and then the next younger ones on their laps. And then my mother and my father in the front of whatever baby she had. I don't know how many, maybe that'd be five. Then. Yeah, that'd be about right.
Yeah, maybe
one in the boot, I don't know. But that's what I, and that's what I wrote that song about. And it's so funny because people go, oh my God, we went on a Sunday drive. You know, I remember last week or the week before I did something with Marty Whelan, and Marty Whelan said, oh my God, we went on the Sunday drive. And he said, and I'm an only child. He said, I had loads of space.
I know, but you know, that's it. Like, and that's,
you know, but isn't that what songs should
absolutely bring those back, memories back. Like, yeah. And, you know, there are things we'll always have and cherish. Like.
Yeah, and it's funny then how a song can travel. So that particular song, then Brett Eldridge cut it in Nashville, and then he called his album Sunday Drive, and then he brought a whole new following to that song. So it's, music is a joy, it's a gift, it's, you know, it's got nothing to do with an industry, it shouldn't have. It's magic, it's, you know, so that's why I love it.
Now, speaking of loving it and all that, obviously performing is probably what you love most, I would imagine. You're going.
The reason it isn't. I go through phases of loving it and then being very nervous about it and being insecure about it and then forgetting that. And then, like, when I made Innocent Run, that was the first album I ever made, and I signed with this American company called Corb, and I wasn't kind of ready to make a record. I didn't know anything about records. And then I made the record and I really didn't like performing. I just didn't. So then what I did was I completely shied away from performance for probably about 6 years.
Yeah.
So I made that record in 2006. And the next record I made was 2018.
Was it that long?
12 years. Yeah. I just didn't. I made loads of other people's records.
Yes.
But I just didn't want to be the front person. I just didn't enjoy it. And I loved writing. But then I wrote a bunch of songs for Lighthouse Keeper, and I thought, oh my God, I love these songs so much. Maybe I'm ready to go back on the road. And that's what we did. Then we came back, and that album went to number one, thank God. And then people thought, wow, he's going to make it. We're going to make another record. So I suppose it's about time I make something.
So you're going playing in the Sea Church 28th of May in Ballycotton.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward. I've never been down there.
Yeah, beautiful. I think, especially when you're living in a church.
Yes, well, playing in a church. Yeah. I love churches, so I'm going to feel right at home.
You're going to be at home, absolutely. There, it's going to be really good. Yeah. And you're going to love it down there. That'll be a good
gig. And I think we're in Dublin the following night, and I'm looking forward to that too. So they'll be the first kind of gigs in over 2 years.
Yeah,
amazing,
isn't it? Yeah, those 2 years they just went past us. They did absolutely.
The last 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dan, look, we're going to leave it with like that. You're going to play us a song, please God.
And do Sunday Drive, I think. Yeah,
absolutely. So, Dan, thank you very much for coming.
It's
a pleasure talking to you.
It's my pleasure. It's great to be back in y'all.
Great to have you.
Say where we were going, we just climbed into the back seat, and our eyes wide open to the picture show outside. I guess we really didn't understand at all. Remember looking up at them in the front row, hands touched together almost out of sight. And it's been a long, hard week, but now the slow release of a Sunday afternoon. And
We were only young and they were trying hard to reach us. And how was I to know back then this was something so worth keeping? Watching the world through an open window, trees lined up like dominoes. This old car would find her own way home. It's the ordinary thing that means so much. And that's when I learned it all from them, to fight, to love, to laugh again. And man, I thought that we were only wasting time. We were out on a Sunday drive. Sun warms your soul like an old friend, singing songs along that ribbon of a road. And everyone you've ever loved sitting there so close. Never thinking that we'd ever get old. Why would we ever get old? Why, we were watching the world through an open window, trees lined up like dominoes. The soap car would find her own way home. It's the ordinary thing that means so much. And that's when I learned it all from them, to fight, to love, to laugh again. Man, I thought that we were only wasting time. We were out on a Sunday drive. Oh, Sunday drive. I didn't say where we were going, I just helped them to the back seat. And my dad just smiled and said, son, don't drive too far. Your mama gets pretty tired these days. And after a few miles, I guess they recognize some places, and I listened as they reminisced about this world that they had always known, how it changes. It's probably never gonna be the same again. And I caught them in the mirror, they were holding hands and smiling, and looking younger than they'd been in years. Through all those years spent watching the world through an open window, trees lined up like dominoes. This old car would find her own way home. It's the ordinary thing that means so much. And that's when I learned it all from them, to fight, to love, to laugh again. Man, I thought that we were only wasting time. We were out on a Sunday drive. Out on a Sunday drive. My sisters and my brothers, Sunday drive. And my father and my mother, out on a Sunday drive. Sunday drive.